Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Welcome back, everybody. This is The Whole Scoop Health and Wellness Radio Show. I'm your host, Carol Ferraci. And we are the health and wellness show. I'd like to say that we are the health and wellness show for Blog Talk Radio. No, we're not, but I mean, we're not the one, but we are one of them, but I think we're the best. So we always have highly credentialed guests. That's a stipulation for being on this show. Remember, all the information you get on this show are from the experts in the field that are out there that you would see if you were one of their patients. So it's important for me to bring you those kinds of people because it's my goal to bring you information that you can use, information that you can decipher as to what's right for you, and, you know, that's just what it's all about. I am Carol Ferraci, your licensed registered dietitian and your host for this show. You can find me at naturallynutritioninc.com, and, you know, I got to do this whole thing where I got to tell you that regardless of what we talk about on this show, it's important to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on the program. Of course, you know that. But tonight's show, we're calling it Stress Less About Incontinence. Well, you know, this is always a topic. We do this topic. We've been doing it now for a couple of years, and I do it at least once a year. And it's amazing to me the support that we get on this particular show, because when I first started this, and I brought this topic in, I thought, but no, trust me, there's so many people that are interested in this, and I'm just so grateful for our guest tonight. And I'll get to her in a minute. Remember, though, that the call-in number is 347-855-8894, 347-855-8894. You can also direct questions and comments to us on our Facebook Blog Talk Radio Group page. It's the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group. We have a new website, thewholescoopradio.com, and you'll find information about our guests and information about our shows, and that's still a work in progress. So check it out, 347-855-8894. We will be taking questions later on in the show. At that time, remember to press the number 1 to get in the queue to let me know that you have questions, and I'll call out the last 4 digits of your telephone number. So who do we have tonight? Well, we have one of our favorites back, and I am, like I said earlier, so very grateful that she's here. Her name is Jane Kaufman, and she's been practicing as a physical therapist for more than 30 years, and she comes out of Vermont tonight where she says it's not that much snow. We didn't really qualify what that really means because I'm in Florida, so any snow is a lot of snow. And, you know, Jane has a fabulous, fabulous bio, and she's done things like she's a graduate of Ithaca College Physical Therapy. She's earned a master's degree. She was certified by the Biofeedback Certification Institute of America in pelvic muscle dysfunction and biofeedback, becoming one of only 6 healthcare practitioners or professionals in the Northeast to earn this prestigious certification. So for more on Jane, check out that website at thewholescoopradio.com, because I'd really like to bring her on, because you know what it's like with this show. We start talking about things, the next thing you know, it's 8 o'clock. It's time to wrap it up. So without further ado, let's say hi to Jane. Hey, Jane.
Hi. Hi. Thank
How
you for
are
having
ya?
Me. I'm
oh,
great.
Thanks.
Thank
so
you. This is a great night, and we're going to talk about some great topics, although some
people
might not like that, but yeah.
Yeah, it's true. You know, you heard me say that it's just amazing to me the interest that we have in this particular topic, because it's something that people don't talk about, but
right,
they want to talk about. And just to kind of get us started, just to kind of let everybody know how big this whole topic is, some of the statistics say that, and Jane, correct me if you have different statistics, 1 in 5 adults over the age of 40 have overactive bladders, and And then that can lead to an uncontrollable bowel. So, I mean, it's something to think about. It's nothing that any of us wants, but a lot of us have. I mean, 1 in 5, that's huge.
It is huge.
And maybe we should start with... Go ahead.
So when you hear something like that and you think, oh, my goodness, you know, 1 in 5 have this, and then you can end up with bowel problems. There's all sorts of things that can go on. The whole idea is that this is not a normal part of aging. So I kind of thought it would be fun to start out with busting a few myths out there about the pelvic floor, because we all have little theories about, oh, well, this is okay or that's okay. So I thought maybe I'd bring up a couple of things that really aren't okay and that aren't true medically and things that we are able to correct. And I think it's important
right.
for people to be able to talk about this. It's, you can get together with a group of women after exercise class. Who wants to say, oh, my gosh, did I really pee in my pants a lot in that class? Like, that doesn't go over well with your friends. And it's still considered a bit of a taboo or a stigma for people to talk about it in some groups. Some groups are okay with it. But the idea is to say we need to correct this. We need to be able to talk about it with our friends or our health care providers and deal with it so we don't live with this. So the first myth that I think I should bust is to say this is a normal part of aging. And it's not. I see people in my practice.
So it's not for anybody. Is that right? There
correct.
Has to be an underlying cause to it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes, and very often the underlying cause is something as simple as they're not using their muscle. And we'll get into talking about that muscle. But the whole idea is that because you're 65 years old, I'm now on Medicare. Of course I'm going to leak. No. I see people who are 90, I think the oldest in my office has been 97 years old, and that lovely woman said, thank goodness there's somebody to correct this. I am sick and tired of wearing diapers. And people can get better no matter how old they are. So it's not a normal process that should happen to the body. So that's the first myth. The second myth I want to bust, and then I think we should bring them up as we need to throughout the whole hour. But, well, if I leak, maybe I should stop drinking water. Maybe I shouldn't have anything to drink.
Oh,
and
my God. How many times have heard that from people?
You're on my page on that one. So
yeah.
We need to drink good fluids because we have to keep our body hydrated because our body needs that to survive. But also what ends up in our bladder then is really concentrated urine that actually is an irritant, and the bladder then wants to expel that irritant, which means you leak more. And then what you leak is really stinky. And what you're trying to avoid is that problem, and yet you develop it because you're not drinking enough water. So, in fact, people need not go crazy like with 2 gallons of water, but to drink 8 cups of water in the course of a day. So, or 6 cups of water. 6 to 8 is pretty good. As long as your pee comes out fairly clear, that's what's really important. But so many people come in and say, I can't drink anything. I can't have any kind of fluid. Or I only drink iced tea because that's what I really like. Well, that's not, you know, something that you want to do all the time either. So that's something we want to change as well. Another myth to bust would be that it doesn't matter whether I poop or not every day. And the fact is, if you poop every day, it keeps the pressure off your bladder, your colon. When it's full, will sit on your bladder and make your symptoms worse. So if you're not pooping every day, you really need to consider having fiber and making that part of your regular dietary habits so that you don't have more risk of incontinence because of that. And there's actually 25 million Americans who have some type of incontinence. And you know what? 75 to 80% of those are women.
Out of
25
okay.
million. So I don't know what the math is on that one, but it's got to be pretty significant.
Yeah,
stress
no kidding.
Incontinence, which is what we're going to talk about tonight, is the most prevalent form of incontinence among women, and it affects approximately 15 million adult women in our country.
Wow.
twice
an adult.
Incontinence.
And that is
adult.
Over the age of 40, right? Or is that younger?
I think you could take that over the age of 20. Or,
seriously.
Yeah, over the age of 20 would be a time. Because does childbirth affect it? Yes. Pregnancy, childbirth, and menopause are major reasons for the increased prevalence of incontinence in women as compared to men. So that's another avenue we could go down and talk about that role. So, yes, I would say anybody over, say, 20 or 16, whatever age somebody might be starting to have children, that could well become a problem for them at that point in time. And for women over the age of 60, 23% of those women report dealing with some form of incontinence. So it doesn't say whether it's stress or urge in that statistic, but certainly people are leaking. And what makes it more of a problem or a situation is that watch television for a couple of days, and what kind of ads do you see? Oh, wear these pads. Oh, wear those pads. Oh, take this drug. Oh, do that. A lot of people don't want to have to go through all of that, and there are natural means to manage the problem. So there's a lot we can really do.
Normalize it, and so going back to what you said originally, those ads normalize this whole topic, and then if it really is not a sign of aging, the marketing industry sure has made it one.
Yep, exactly. So, you're absolutely right. And they make it okay and cool to wear a diaper as you dance with, you know, your partner, or you go out and play football, or you do this, that, or the other thing. It's okay to wear pads. You can get rid of the problem with some easy steps for many people. And some people do need surgery, and some areas of the country are more prevalent towards surgery than other areas. It depends on what your region knows and what they understand and what your physicians want to be able to do to help you manage the problem. So there's all kinds of approaches to it. There is not one size fits all in terms of management. But there are some simple things that people can learn to do, which we'll talk about in the course of this whole hour, that they can learn to manage the problem on their own and independently. And that's what we want to be able to do is take care of our health. That's what this whole show is all about, is managing your health in an easy environment.
Right. So what, I mean, if I'm just, you know, the average Joe, which I am, if I'm sitting there and I'm watching an ad and I see that it's kind of cool and I guess I'll just start getting some pads or whatever, and I'll use the pads, and maybe, you know, I just hope that during the night I don't have an issue because I got a cold or something. I started coughing, and it's just like that. All that stuff just says it's okay in this society, but yet you're saying that there are things that can be done, maybe even outside of surgery.
Yes.
That people can then are we talking cure or are we talking management?
So I once gave a lecture to, probably 100 physicians, and somebody said to me, what's your success rate? And I said, I would say we cure 90%, 95% of the people that come in the office. And one doctor said, you can't ever cure anyone. And I was like, yeah, that was a really poor choice of words on my part. So in order to keep this muscle functioning, if we're talking about the pelvic floor muscle, which is ultimately responsible, and we'll get into that in just a minute, you have to use it or you lose it. So once, twice a day, once you've achieved your result, your success, once you've learned not to leak in your pants, if you get up in the morning and you do a set of exercises while you're in the shower, if you do a set of exercises while you're falling asleep at night, beautiful, as long as it keeps the problem away. But every once in a while, you got to make that muscle consciously work. If we think about our body and our pelvis, so all of you that are listening, if you place your hands kind of on those hip bones in the front, just below your belly button, off to the left side and the right side, that's called your spine of your pelvis, and that's the front of your pelvis. And then you walk your fingers towards the middle, which would be a straight line down from your belly button. There's a bone there. That's called your pubic symphysis. That bone is, you have a left side and a right side, and that bone is connected by a cushion, a sponge called a cartilage, which is what we call the pubic symphysis. Then below that pubic symphysis, in your private parts, is a muscle that is hidden by your private parts. And that muscle goes from the front, from the pubic symphysis, it goes under between your legs and it attaches up at your tailbone, which is in the back, below the back part of the pelvis, and that's your tailbone or your coccyx. So that group of muscles that I'm talking about is underneath all of that, and it slings. It's kind of a bowl shape. So if you pick up a bowl in your kitchen, it's rounded along the bottom. Well, this muscle should be rounded along the bottom. And the back of it, where your poop comes out, is a little bit lower than the front of it, where your pee comes out. And that muscle group that's there that you cannot see, so you don't know what it's ever doing, that muscle group is responsible for keeping poop and pee inside your body and telling your body when it's time. Your brain tells you when it's time to empty, but that muscle says, okay, let it go now. So your brain acts as the control. Your brain says, okay, listen to your body. First it whispers, then it yells at you, and it says, go pee. And then you go in the bathroom, you sit on the toilet, you relax your muscle voluntarily. You don't realize it because you've learned it since you were a baby or a toddler. You relax your muscle and your pee comes out. That muscle is under your control. If you don't use it periodically throughout the day, that muscle will become weak. If you don't use your leg, if you put your leg in a brace, what happens if you put your leg in a brace? You can't use it. You have to learn to strengthen the muscles, right? Because you can't walk right after the brace comes off. Well, if you don't use this little muscle, after a while it stops working for you, and then it becomes weakened, and then you have to learn how to control it through an exercise. Years ago, at some point in your lifetime, everyone has learned how to do what we all call a Kegel exercise. That exercise was designed in the 1940s, the late 1940s, to be a way to control symptoms of incontinence. Dr. Arnold Kegel came up with a plan. He did some research, and he said, wow, if women learn to control this muscle by squeezing it, tightening it, preventing leakage, and then releasing the muscle, they can learn to control that muscle, and they can develop greater control overall. So actually, in the 50s, if I remember correctly, he had an ad campaign that said, make it tight at the light. And the whole idea was you would squeeze and release your muscle a couple of times at a traffic light. So you would learn to make it work, make it tight at the light. He didn't really invent the exercise. Dr. Josh Davies did in 1932, but Dr. Arnold Kegel coined that phrase, Kegel exercises, through his research. So people have to learn to use that muscle, but there are so many variations in how to use it and when to use it that a lot of women get really confused and then don't do it correctly. So we really want to set the record straight to teach people how to make that muscle work in their favor when they need to make it work so they don't leak. But the first step is to realize leaking isn't normal. So you don't have an excuse to say, oh, I'm 80 years old, I just leak because I leak because I'm 80. Or I leak because I had 3 kids. No. You need to learn to control your muscle so that you don't leak, even though you had 3 kids. So the ad campaign for things like pull-ups and pads says, don't worry about it. Let us. You can depend on us to protect you from leakage. Over time, people develop what we call insensible loss. They leak more because they have a pad, so they don't have to think about it. So you have to kind of pay attention to your body. Okay.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Let's just walk people through that. If you wear a pad for an extended period of time, you leak more. Let's just start there. Why is that?
Okay. You get up in the morning, and you say, oh, my goodness, today is a busy day. I have multiple places to go. I'm going to be in the car all day. I don't know where I'm going to have to stop to go to the bathroom. I don't have time to drink anything. I'm just going to put a pad on just to be safe. And at the end of the day, you take that pad off and you go, wow, it's soaked. When did that happen? I don't remember ever leaking. So your brain says, you know, you're really busy today. I'm going to take you away from having to think about having to use the bathroom. So therefore, this pad is there. Don't worry about it. Don't think about it. Use your brain for the other things, the thousand errands you have to do today. Don't worry about going to the bathroom, or don't worry about how quickly you get there. So people wear the pad, not everyone, but a lot of people. And over time, they're like, wow, it's wet, but I don't know when it happened. So that's what we call insensate loss or insensible loss. I don't know when I got wet. I just got wet. So we have to realize that our bladder fills and empties throughout the course of a day. Normal bladder patterns would be voiding 6 to 8 times in 24 hours. So if you don't get up at night, or say, let's just say you get up once at night, then in the course of the, say, 16 hours that you're awake, you could pee every 2 to 2.5 to 3 hours in the course of that day, and that would be a normal range, provided you had 6 to 8 cups of clear fluids. If you just drink coffee and iced tea, you'll pee more because that's an irritant. If you go 6 hours at work and don't use the bathroom and then you're wet, you probably went too long. So you have to listen to your body. And what happens is, as your bladder fills, the muscle in your pelvic floor starts to tighten a little bit to hold the weight of the full bladder or the filling bladder. And then the signal goes to your brain. And the signal from your bladder says to your brain, it's starting to get full down here. Maybe you ought to think about emptying. And then your brain says, you know what, I'm really busy because I'm doing 1,000 errands and I don't have time, so go away, I'm not talking to you now. I have to ignore that signal. Then a little while later, it comes on a little bit stronger, and then finally it screams at you and says, if you don't go to the bathroom right now, I'm going to leak. And if you choose to ignore it, you leak. If you choose to listen to it, it might be too late a signal for you, and you can't get to the toilet, so you leak then. But people will leak because the pad is there because they choose to ignore the signal. So every couple of hours, we should all go to the bathroom. Now, that's hard for teachers, nurses, but we have to make the time to make that happen. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. So just to recap, I'm just trying to wrap this around my head here because, you know, you've kind of broken some norms, and I think it's great that you started that way, and if you've got any more, we need to keep going with that. But just to kind of give a recap, it's not normal at any age to have to leak, right?
Exactly, 100%.
Okay.
That is not a normal pattern, right?
It's not appropriate to stop drinking water because you're leaking, because you need to stay hydrated in order to maintain a healthy bladder.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. And if you're not pooping at least once a day, because poop keeps the pressure off the bladder, you will leak more. And what I like the most so far that I've heard is if you continue to wear a pad, you're going to leak more.
Right. Right.
So here's one more
statistic. It's research that looked at women who after they started leaking, and it takes women 6 years statistically to report to a physician that they leak urine. 6 years from the time they start leaking to the time they finally go to someone and say, I have this problem, I don't know what to do. Then it takes the physician, this is the research, another 2 years to say, well, let's go send you off to do something about it. So maybe you have a sinus infection, and every time you get that sinus infection, you're blowing your nose and you're coughing and you're miserable and you keep leaking. The doctor says the first time, well, you know what, we're going to treat the sinus infection. I don't have time to talk to you about the incontinence. So it takes people a while to finally get to a source that can help them if they have dealt with it for a long period of time. So let's take a step back and let's look at a 26-year-old woman who has just given birth to her first baby. Congratulations. You have this great, wonderful baby. But unfortunately, this poor woman says, well, now I'm peeing in my pants every time I sneeze or I cough. All right, I'm really worried about that. Or if I go to gym class, oh my goodness, if I start doing jumping jacks, I'm going to leak all over the place. What do I do? So what's the first thing that someone's going to do? Put a pad on and maybe stop having fluids. So they immediately put a pad on, they stop having fluids, and or as the child gets older, they drop the child at preschool, or before they leave the house, they go to the bathroom, they drop the child at preschool, they think, I'm going to go to the grocery store now before I go to the office. I better pee again. So they pee again. Then they get to the office. I better pee because I'm going to be busy at work. Then they get done with work. I better pee again. Okay, now I have to go back to daycare. They pee again. They pee at daycare. They pee when they get home. And then suddenly, over the course of years, because they were worried about leaking with sneezing or coughing, which is stress incontinence, they start finding that they're peeing more often, and they're using more pads just in case they leak, and they create a bigger problem. So when we get
a problem, the brain says, "Oh, I can relax now, and I don't have to worry about it. So I'm just gonna let go." Right.
And then the woman says, "Well, I better go all the time because I'm wet." So they start peeing more often. So then you suddenly get into this: they pee every hour during the day, and they limit their fluids and they wear pads. And that's a really common thing that I see in my office. And it's young women who are really afraid of leaking, so they actually, unbeknownst to them, create more leaking. So if we took the simple stress incontinence and we treated it right away with some simple measures, we might not get down that road 6-7 years later and have a bigger problem. We might be able to take care of it earlier.
Well, let's go down the road. Since it takes 6 years for most women to report it, then chances are it's no longer just stress incontinence. It's more than that.
Right.
So,
right, correct.
So then what happens? What can they do? I keep going back to the point of it's not normal for any age, so that means that everybody can work with this, right?
So let's start with the woman who's 26 and just had a baby and is leaking.
All right, let's go. I want to go with the 26-year-old, and then I want to flip over to the 90-year-old because I want to cover the gamut, okay? So go ahead.
Okay. All right. So the 26-year-old has had the baby. If you had one child that was a cesarean section, you might have less of a risk of incontinence post-birth, postpartum. But if you have more than one child, even if they're all cesarean section, over time your muscles still get weakened at that base of the pelvis. So remember, I'm going back to the base of the pelvis that I described, that is the bottom of your core, which is the top of your legs, which is that area between that bone in the front and the tailbone in the back, that muscle group that slings down. So when you're carrying a child, there's a huge amount of pressure on that muscle and on that part of your body just by the added weight of an impending birth. Then if you do deliver vaginally, what the baby's head has to do is it has to pound against those muscles and those internal structures as it tries to work its way out of the birth canal. So there's trauma down there. There's stretching. There's trauma to the muscles. Everything is sort of bruised. That whole process creates more stretch and laxity, which is what has to happen to get the baby out of the birth canal. So as that goes on and the woman delivers the baby, then maybe, you know, postpartum, she comes home from the hospital and she sneezes or coughs or picks the baby up out of the cradle and leaks a little bit. So in the very beginning, all the structures are weak and traumatized, but as the months go by and as the woman stops nursing the baby, because there are hormones that keep the muscles being a little more relaxed with nursing, which is great because nursing is so important. But then eventually a woman says, wow, I need to get back to the gym. And I need to start doing jumping jacks and sit-ups, and I need to get on the ball, and I need to do kettle crunches and all sorts of things. And as they do that, they find themselves leaking. They need to learn to control the pelvic floor muscle first. So learning to squeeze the muscle from the very back end, this is a hard concept for people to understand. But remember early on I said the muscle in the front is pierced by the urethra, and at the back is pierced by the colon. In the middle, it's pierced by the vagina. So if the action begins at the back, which is the lower part of the bowl of that muscle, if you squeeze at that back piece like you don't want to pass gas, you can squeeze back there and do 10 jumping jacks and then stop, let go of the muscle, then squeeze the muscle again and do another series of exercises. If you tighten the bottom of that cylinder, the cylinder being your core, you can prevent leakage at the back, leakage in the muscle, which starts at the back. So another way to describe it is take a jug of milk with the cap on the top and tip that jug of milk upside down. Now start pushing the side of the jug. What happens? The side of the jug would be like using your abdominals. If you haven't tightened the end, the spigot, which is the cap of the jug, what's going to happen? If you haven't tightened that cap, that milk is going to squirt out of the container. Well, if you haven't tightened your pelvic floor prior to doing crunches, prior to doing jumping jacks, you're going to leak. So we want to teach you to squeeze that muscle before you leak. When you were 10, 15, 20 years old without kids, it wasn't an issue. That muscle worked because you had muscle memory and it knew what to do on an automatic level, but then you traumatize it with the birth of a child and perhaps the muscle forgets how to work. And that's why doctors say tighten your muscle. Learn to squeeze it and release it. Don't tighten it and hold it all day, but tighten, release, tighten, release. In other European countries, they, and especially in France, they give women up to 12, I believe, pelvic floor therapy sessions after the birth of each child to learn how to make that muscle work. So you have to get that tone back in the muscle to prevent future problems down the road. And that's what we want women to understand, is that you have to exercise it because it's made of fibers that need exercise. It doesn't mean hold it tight all day or hold it tight for 100 jumping jacks or Pilates 100s. You don't hold it tight the whole time. You tighten it for a few, and then you purposely let it go. Then you squeeze it again. Then you go through some other exercises, and then you let it go. But sometimes it needs to rest throughout the day, but then it needs to squeeze, and then it needs to release. Does that make any sense, Carol?
Sure. It makes a lot of sense, Jane. But the thing that I keep coming back to in my head is, if it's that simple, why do so many people have this issue? I mean, what are we missing here? Like, do we just not have the advertising dollars to say, hey, do some Kegels? I mean, it sounds kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
But, you know,
that's exactly right. Who has more money, the drug companies or me?
Right. I know. I understand.
That is,
I'm just saying.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, though, this is blowing my mind because, okay, we haven't even talked about medications that are out there. So we've got the pharmaceutical industry that is really interested in this. We've got the incontinence industry that, you know, they're just making killings on this. Because you just, you do me a favor, just real quickly go through those statistics again. The percentage of people who have this problem in different age groups. Can you just run those numbers one more time?
Sure, okay. Well, first of all, out of the 25 million adult Americans who have incontinence, 75 to 80% are women. One in four women over the age of 18 experience some form of leaking involuntarily, you know, maybe laughing at a movie or can't get into the restroom in time. On average, women wait 6.5 years from the first time they experience symptoms until they obtain a diagnosis for their bladder control problem. Stress incontinence is the most prevalent form of incontinence, affecting 15 million adult women in the U.S. Urinary incontinence is twice as common in women as men. Pregnancy, childbirth, and menopause are major reasons for the increased prevalence of incontinence in women as compared to men. And for women
okay.
over the age of 60, 23% will deal with incontinence.
So do you have any clue, is it fair to say with those numbers, the majority of people, say 90% of them, wear pads or diapers or are on some kind of medication or both? Would you say that?
I don't think I can. I don't think I can because I don't know. Because a lot of these statistics are based on what people are willing to report.
All
and,
right. Well, so let's just so it, your practice. And just say, give just ballpark maybe the number of people that you see versus the number of people that are coming in with pads and on medications. Just give us a small sample.
I would say if you combine both of those, pads and medication, I would say 85%. And we have
okay.
a busy, very
so
busy office.
I wasn't
office.
That far off.
Yep.
So if that's the case, then, and we multiply that factor out, say, just be conservative at 75% of the people
sure.
who have this problem wear pads or take meds. Out of the 25 million people who have this issue, what kind of numbers are we talking about? As it relates to the pharmaceutical industry, as it relates to the incontinence industry, they have no incentive whatsoever to help get the word out that people can actually be, for lack of a better word, cured, but at least managed without
I
any
have
of this.
Right, and I have two little statistics taped to my computer cart in the office, and I'm talking to you from another location right now. But I should have – one of them came from Time Magazine 2 years ago, and the other came from the Wall Street Journal. And essentially, they both said there are more adult diapers sold in our country than there are children diapers by billions of dollars.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that probably puts it in a nutshell for us, but both of they worded it different ways, but both of those sources had said something similar along that line.
Wow. That is incredible.
Sometimes it's
more convenient. I really would have never expected to say that. I mean, that's incredible. So
what I'm saying is, a little bit of effort goes a long way. You can learn to control that muscle if you want to learn how to control it. You don't have to rely on pads. You don't have to, if you've tried doing the exercises and you haven't had success and you're really frustrated and it's really bad, then you have lots of options. You do have drugs and you do have surgery and you do have pads. But if you say, I haven't done anything, but I'm just going to put a pad on, then you owe it to yourself to go out there and learn how to tighten and release that muscle and change how that muscle functions. Don't give up your fluids. If you want to have your Starbucks coffee in the morning, don't give that up, but drink some water throughout the day to help counteract the caffeine in your bladder. If you refuse to drink anything because you're going to get in the car and you're going to drive 4 hours, plan when you're going to have your fluids based on when you have access to a bathroom stop. I'm the worst when it comes to flying on an airplane. I don't want to use the airplane bathrooms. I hate that. So
right.
I get on the plane. I don't have anything to drink until, say, within an hour of my flight landing, and then I might have 2 cups of water, 3 cups of water, something like that, knowing that when the flight lands, I can get to the bathroom. Because I know it takes at least an hour to work through my system. So I might not have anything. I'm not going to load up in water when I get on the plane because then I'll have to use that bathroom. So I wait until towards the end of the flight, and then I drink my water, and then I drink while I've landed until I get on my next flight. And I get by doing that all the time. And know what your body does. Don't withhold your fluids because you need the water to dilute what's in your bladder and to help make your cells and your body function. And I'm sure you report this all the time to people. You have to have the fluid. It sustains life. If you didn't give water to your plants in your house, what happens to them? They shrivel up. So we have to learn to tighten and release and control this muscle, but at the same time, we have to know that it's there. You can't ignore it. So we have to make it work.
So let's let's talk about the exercises again. Let's just make sure people understand what the exercises are.
Okay. So go back and think about this sling of muscles, again, hidden by your body parts. So we're going to make an assumption, an uneducated assumption right now, that your muscle just needs to be exercised. You don't think about it. You don't use it. It doesn't occur to you. You leak sometimes during the day. Pay attention to when you go to the bathroom. Make sure you empty your bladder every couple of hours during the day. You can't go a full day at work and not pee. You have to be able to empty your bladder. So what are you going to do if you want to strengthen that muscle? So you're sitting at your in an office meeting, and you think, oh, I'm really bored by this meeting, so I'm going to do these exercises. That woman said, I'm, you know, Whole Scoop Radio. So what you're going to do is you're going to sit and gently, this is gentle, gently squeeze as if you don't want to pass gas. So use the example, you're in a crowded elevator and you're standing next to the person you admire most. But you had a whole plate of beans a little while ago and you're like, whoosh, I don't know what to do. So therefore you want to squeeze that muscle at the back end. I know we're talking about the front end of the muscle today. But the muscle action begins at the back end. So you have to squeeze from the back end to get the whole use of the muscle. Would you do a bicep curl if your muscle was tight and you were just doing a little tiny bicep curl in the gym? Your trainer would get mad at you for that. No, you can't do that. You have to relax it and grab it. So if you grab it from the back end, you're getting the whole muscle. So you squeeze it and release it. Squeeze it from the back end. Release it to the back end. Just keep your focus to the back. Squeeze it and release it. You don't use your belly muscle. You don't use your legs. You don't squeeze your gluteals, your hamstrings, your inner thighs. You don't squeeze anything but this little muscle. Squeeze it and release it. You do it 10 times in a row. Squeeze, release. Squeeze it for 1 or 2 seconds. Release it for 4 seconds, roughly. Okay. That gets one part of the muscle, but muscles are complicated. This muscle has a second part to it, and it needs a longer contraction. This is where it gets tough because I want you to squeeze it and hold it and breathe for a total of 10 seconds. Can you keep it squeezed? That's where your brain says, oh, I'm going to go out and look at the birds at the bird feeder. Oh, I'm going to see where the traffic is. Oh, I'm going to go see where I can find that shirt in my favorite store and see if it's on sale. And then you lose sight of what you're doing, so you let go before your 10 seconds is up. So it takes a bit of concentration in the beginning till you get used to it. But when you tighten it, 10 seconds later, you need to feel yourself release it. If you can't feel yourself release it, then try to tighten it for just 5 seconds. If you tighten it for 5 seconds, like you don't want to pass gas, and you let go, can you feel it release? If you can, that means your muscle does better with a 5-second hold, not a 10. You do 10 of those in a row. So you've done a quick one. Squeeze it, release it, squeeze it, release it, for a total of 10. That's 1 minute. 1 minute. You immediately follow that with hold for 5 or hold for 10, and you rest it for twice as long as you held it. That could be 5 minutes, or that could be 2.5 minutes if you held it only for 5 seconds. But you have to feel your muscle let go. If you can't feel it let go at 10 seconds, that's too long. If you can't feel it let go after 5 seconds, stick just with the quick ones for a while. But this is making it tighten, making it release. When you tighten it, as if you don't want to pass gas, the muscle moves towards your head. When you release it, it moves towards your feet. Even if you're standing on your head, it moves towards your head and it releases towards your feet. That's the direction of the muscle. Now, it doesn't move far. It only moves a half an inch. So if you have a ruler, look at the ruler. Half an inch isn't very far. And you can't see it, so you don't know if it's working right. If you're someone who says, oh, I do it all the time, it does nothing, then that's another radio talk show time, okay? Because that's a whole tense muscle that doesn't work. But for those of you that go, okay, I can squeeze it and I can release it, I can do this, it's a great exercise to do. This muscle doesn't contract and relax for you on its own. You have to make it work, just like you make your arms work and your legs work. So you go to the gym, you have to do some bicep curls in front of the mirror, right? Everybody loves to work out at the gym. You have to work this muscle out, too. So you do some in the shower. You do them several times throughout the day, the quick ones and the longer ones. Tie it into making your coffee in the morning. Tie it into looking at your email. Tie it into a meeting. Meetings are great because you know what? No one can see you doing the exercise if you do
right.
it correctly. So you
right.
could do it all day long in a meeting and it would be totally fine. No one would ever know. If you're working at a cash register, stand at the cash register. And while you have a customer, you're checking them out, and you're automatically swiping things through, then you can just tighten and release, tighten and release. Tie it into things you do every day. And if that doesn't change your muscle, think about, am I drinking the right kind of fluids? Do I know that before I sneeze, when you get that tickle in your nose, squeeze your muscle. Squeeze it before you sneeze. Then you tighten the bottom of that milk carton, and you don't push the pee out, but you allow it to stay inside, and then you don't leak.
Okay.
So these are habits that we have to learn that we learned them as a kid. We forget. Our muscles get traumatized with birth, and then we forget about it.
Now let's move on to the 90-year-old, okay?
Yep.
And why, just, you know, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it because, I mean, truthfully, you know, it's easy. It's very easy to say, hey, guess what? Like, you know, it happens when you get older. But it's
right.
not. It's not. It's not true, right? So,
right. You can make a change.
Control?
All right. So, you love those older women because once we hit menopause, where we get those changes in our muscles, so you know how you get the flabbiness in your arm, you get the flabbiness in your thighs, you get the flabbiness under your chin, and you think, it doesn't matter what I do, I can't get rid of the flabbiness. Well, your pelvic floor gets flabby too, and it's because we lose the fountain of youth, which is estrogen. We lose that, which is creates the resiliency in our muscles. So as we age, that goes away. By the time you're 90, you can bet you don't have any of that left. So you have to compensate for that automatic resiliency by making that muscle work. So you have to go through your exercises and change how you view that muscle. Many of the 90-year-olds put a pad on, or depending on where they're living, maybe somebody puts the pad on them. What do 90-year-olds like to drink? Nothing. Or if they do, they drink coffee, maybe tea, maybe a little bit of water, but oftentimes it's a 2 or 3 ounce cup at a meal. So they don't always drink a lot of fluid because they've grown up in the era where you don't want to have a lot of fluids because your body's going to leak. So we want them to be able to make that muscle work and give them the power. I'm all about empowerment. If you know this muscle is under your control, you can change that muscle behavior. If that's the only thing you remember tonight, that's the most important piece. You can control this muscle. You can tighten it, and you can release it. But if you tighten it and hold it tight all the time, it's going to get exhausted. So you have to release it sometimes in that process.
Well, what about that has had this go on for a while, as most people do, and if you're 90, you've had it for a while, what are the odds or the chances of you know, getting that muscle back? And how often do you have to, you know, work it? And how long, are the standards a little different, or, you know, what happens?
So I tailor the standards to what somebody can do. So, yes, I still have them practice. They just squeeze it, release it, squeeze it, release it. And it may be that they end up having to still wear a pad, but maybe they're not wet in that pad. So, therefore, they will find that, you know, okay, I have to wear the pad just in case, but I'm not wet anymore. or maybe they find that they can get to the toilet without leaking on the way to the toilet, or, you know, they will change certain pieces of what goes on, but everybody's very individual. So can you take a 90-year-old out of a pad? Depends on the 90-year-old. Depends on what they want to do and what they can do and how long
they've
been in
a pad. Yeah, that's a great point. And you know, not everybody is different, so you're right. Maybe what you just defined to me, I would call baby steps, you know. It's kind of like,
yeah.
You know, you're at point A you're at point D and you want to go back to A, and maybe you settle for somewhere between B and C because it's better.
Correct.
So how does that, you know, but when you talk about the exercises and strengthening that muscle, you said at least twice a day for most people, but what about the 90-year-old that's had this problem a lot longer than other people? How often should they exercise, or how long should they hold it, or what, you know, what should they do?
So I say twice a day if once you get your symptoms under control, once the symptoms are gone. You still have to make that muscle work. But if you're in the midst of having symptoms, how much should you do? I have people that come to see me do 60 quick ones and 60 long ones in a course of a day. 60 plus 60 makes 120 exercises. But you can't do them all at once. So your muscle can't handle that. So your muscle can handle 10 or 20 in a row. I can't tell you if you can do 20, but you're going to aim for 10. So if you do 10 quick ones and 10 long ones, then you would repeat that 6 times a day to get to your 120. When you got really good at it, you could do 20 quick ones and 20 long ones and do it 3 times a day. But in the beginning, we don't know if it's going to work for you. So therefore, you want to back off and only do 10 in a row, which takes you only a couple of minutes. Easy to do in the shower, easy to do while you're making your coffee, easy to do while you're drinking your coffee, looking at the newspaper, looking at your email. So it's a quick, like I said, one set of quick ones is a minute. You could buckle your seatbelt getting in the car, and before you backed out of your garage, you could have 10 quick ones done.
Right. Okay.
And the long ones take a little longer. So the goal is 60 quick ones and 60 long ones. How you spread it out is really based on your success. So I never send somebody down to the level of 20 long and 20 short in a row. You wouldn't want to ever do more than that at once. But that's the high end of it. So you want to start lower. You want to start with 10 several times a day because you want to do them right. If you start saying, I got to do 20, and you start substituting other muscles and you start getting sloppy in your technique, you're not helping yourself.
Okay. Let me remind everybody that if you want to ask a question, press the number 1. I'm checking the blog, and I think we've answered most of those questions. I kind of incorporated them into my questions. So if I did not get your question answered, blog it again, okay? The other thing is, Jane, do me a favor, and we've got just a few minutes left. The last thing I want to do is make sure everybody knows how to contact you if they want to talk, if you want that. Secondly, the first thing I want to do is just take a minute, let's recap how to do those exercises and do them slowly so they kind of get in to the head. I want to make sure that people can really understand verbally through the radio how to do those exercises.
All right. So you're going to sit, stand, or lie down. It doesn't matter to me. You squeeze as if you don't want to pass gas. That in itself is a hard thing for people to realize because they go, well, I have a pee problem. Why would I go back to a poop issue? That's where the muscle action begins and ends. You have to go to the back end of the muscle to get the front end of the muscle. So it's really important. Squeeze like you don't want to pass gas, or I don't want to have diarrhea. I'm going to squeeze the back of the muscle, and you tighten back there. That gets the majority of the muscle. It will translate to the front. You just might not feel it, but trust me, it's there. Squeeze it, release it 10 times in a row. As if you don't want to pass gas and you're standing next to the most important person in your life. Secondly, after you do that quick one, squeeze it, For 10 seconds, let it go. For 20 seconds, always rest it twice as long as you contract it. Why? We want to isolate this muscle so we don't fatigue it so that other muscles come in and say, I'll help out. Don't use your belly. Don't use your thighs. Don't use your buttocks. This one muscle that's so hidden that if you do this exercise, nobody can tell. That's the beauty of it. You could stand in the grocery store. I have done them standing on a stage giving a lecture. Nobody knows I'm doing it. You can't see it work. So that's the beauty of the muscle. So we want to make it work so no one knows it's working. Squeeze it, release it. Don't go and sit on the toilet and start and stop your stream. That sets you up for other issues. Just squeeze the back of the muscle and release it. If you can't hold it for even 5 seconds, that's okay. Relax it and just do those quick ones. Then build up to 5 seconds. Then aim to build up to 10 seconds. It's a work in progress. If you were perfect, you wouldn't be doing them. So you have to make
it
happen.
There's no real answer. I mean, it's like there's no right way of doing them. It's kind of like whatever you can do, you do, and then you progress up from there.
Right. There's a right way for the technique, but not in terms of the number. So you do what you can do, squeeze it, and release it. And if you can do 8 quick ones, that's better than none. Keep practicing. Within a couple of weeks, you'll be able to progress to more.
Wow.
And then you'll also find if you freeze, squeeze that muscle before you bend down to pick up the little dog, that's better than bending down to pick up the dog and leaking as you bend down. So you want to squeeze that muscle to make a tight core so you can bend, pick up, and then relax your muscle. So that's learning to use your muscle in a functional capacity. Freeze, squeeze, bend down, pick up the dog, pick up the newspaper, whatever, stand up, relax the muscle. If you don't leak, you've done it correctly. If that was a time when you leaked, freeze, squeeze, sneeze. These are all times when you would want to use that muscle.
That's great. We have just a few minutes left. As usual, we've run out of time. It's amazing. We do have one we didn't get to on the blog, and it says, and I'm assuming this OB is, and that's just from doing the research, is overactive bladder. Okay, so that would be stress incontinence, right?
No, they're two separate ones. Okay, but that's okay.
Okay.
All right. OAB is overactive bladder. Yeah.
Well, okay, so it says, my doctor says that my OB is caused from smoking. How can this be true?
Okay. So smoking irritates, the byproduct of the smoking creates an irritant to the bladder, and that makes people cough when they smoke. So when they cough, what happens? It's like sneezing. They don't tighten their pelvic floor first. So smokers who cough, which smokers do, they have to learn to squeeze their pelvic floor before they cough. So they have to recognize when they're going to cough, squeeze that muscle. But the byproduct of the smoking leads to more of an irritation that causes you to want to cough. And then when you cough, you put more pressure in your abdomen that causes you to push on your pelvic floor. Remember the jug. Remember the milk jug. It's pushing on the milk jug, and so you're going to leak. So if you tighten the cap on the milk jug, which is tighten the pelvic floor, you're less likely to leak.
Okay, well, you know, that's a great answer because, you know, even me reading that question going, I was going into the whole physiological thing, and no, it's physical, and
right.
it makes perfect
right.
sense. Yeah, that's great. Right. Wow.
We are in
Jane,
charge of this muscle.
Dead.
We have
it.
To use it.
There
we go.
That's amazing how fast this goes. For this topic never ceases to amaze me because it can be so simple for so many people. I think maybe the next time that you come back, which I would hope that you'll say yes.
Thank you.
I would hope that maybe what we can do is kind of talk about, really go through those Mythbusters, and let's talk about men, because we never seem to get to the topic of men, and there's a lot to be talked about, right?
Right. They don't get away scot-free. They got issues, too, as they age.
Yeah,
so,
and we've got a lot of men, you know, we get a lot of males listening, and, you know, let's make it worthy. So, guys, I promise, we're going to cut that. We're going to go ahead and go for this for you the next time, and we'll figure out when that's going to be. Jane and I are going to talk in just a few minutes.
Yep.
Okay, so everybody,
All right, so you can go to my website. You can go to www.phoenixpt.com. That's my website. And in the website, there will be a contact me or contact us place where you can click that on and email me through the website, phoenixpt.com. Then you can have a sense of what we do by looking at the website. If you don't want that, it's PHNX, no vowels, PHNXPT at PhoenixPT.com. Either way, you can reach us, but I would say go through the website.
Wonderful. Jane, thank you so very much for
thank
being
you.
Here. You're just fabulous.
thank you. I love
can't
it.
Thank you
thank
enough.
You. All right.
Everybody.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
And we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Susan Schatzer's coming back to finish up her little series on Ask a Question, Change Your Life. So it'll be real interesting. So I promise it'll be amazing. I've done this with her. She's amazing. It truly is. If you ask the right question and you actually can shape the course of your life. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks, and we'll be back. And we have a lot of good shows coming up. I'll tell you all about those. But right now, we truly are out of time. Jane, good night. Everybody, good night.
Good night.
Thank you so much.
Thank
for listening.
You.
We'll see you again. Bye, everybody.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. And the outro music is not...